It's February 16th, 2009. This will be an interview of Irene Woolard. It's taking place at the Kinsey Library with Joan Weaver and Rosetta Graff, asking quick questions.
So what is your full name?
Irene Emily Fisher Woolard.
And where do you currently reside?
714 Marsh Avenue in Kinsey.
Where were you born?
I was born in rural Stafford County, north of Hudson, a small town, at home.
What were the names of your parents and grandparents?
My father's name was Arthur Christian Fisher. My mother's name was Amelia Frederica Olick before she married my dad. My mother's parents was Frederica Olick and Eugene Olick. My dad's parents was Christian Fisher and Margaretha Fisher.
Where did they live?
My father's parents lived in the Hudson area. They migrated from Germany. There were four brothers that came from Germany, and they all settled in that area. So my mother's parents came from Germany and settled in Indiana. And then from Indiana, they came to Hudson vicinity. He was a pastor, and he was a pastor at this church. And then when he left there, they moved to Nebraska. But when they were in Hudson, that's where my mother met my dad. And they became a couple.
And you grew up in Hudson.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Do you remember anything about the Depression or the Industrial
I remember one distinctly. I don't know how old I was. I couldn't have been maybe 9 or 10. I don't know. No, I wasn't that old. The only thing I remember, it started to get dark, and the sun went away, and it started getting darker and darker, and I know my mother said, well, we need to hang wet sheets up by the window because there was going to be a dust, and there was, and it was just like night, and I know she hung wet sheets and blankets up because the dust was so fine, very fine, that it just seeped through everything. It wasn't like sand, it was just like talcum. And I remember, I thought, boy, this is really kind of neat, you know, we got all the windows. I don't think my parents thought it was too neat, but, and then there were like just drifts, you know, and I was kid enough that I thought it was kind of fun, but it wasn't fun because the crops, a lot of crops were ruined, you know, it was... That's about the only one I remember.
You know anything about the Depression?
No, actually, you know, I said we somehow my parents managed very well. My daddy farmed, and the only thing we ever bought when we went to town was flour, because Mom baked bread, flour and sugar. We had pigs, and we had that we butchered, you know, and we had cattle that we butchered, and we had chickens and eggs and milk and cream and garden and fruit trees. I mean, really, we, I guess I was young enough, maybe it was difficult for them, but I was too young. You know, everything seemed fine to me, but we didn't have everything, you know, and I knew that you couldn't, But I didn't miss it because I never had it. You know? But no, we didn't go for food. We always had plenty of food, and I had one good Sunday dress, and I had four school dresses, and I could wear a clean dress every day. But then I had to go back and rewear them, you know, rotate, because that was all I had. But didn't bother me because everybody was doing the same thing. You know, if you don't know any better, you don't miss it.
Your mother sewed your clothes?
Yes. Yes, she sewed my dresses. And yeah.
Okay, how old were you when
I think I was probably between 14 and 15, because like I was going to say, I went to a country school when I started out in the middle of the section, and there was like 14 kids in all 8 grades. And the teacher we had at that time had one other little girl that was, she had a boy, that's what it was. She had one boy that was 6, and there was Louise Groh and myself. Her birthday was the day after mine. We were both born in August. We were 5. And so the teacher said, well, I only have one little boy. Why don't you just send him just for a little competition or 3 in a, you know, and then next year we'll put him back in the first grade. And, you know, they could do that back then. So I started first grade when I was 5, but they never put me back. So I was about 14 when I started high school. So that's probably about how old I was when the war started, I imagine. Because I can remember being in high school. I'm sure I just started because I can remember when it was over. When the peace was, I remember that. Yeah, we listened on the radio, but again, you know, and not that I'm stupid or anything, but, you know, when you're a 14-year-old kid, you hear this and, oh, this is terrible. But, I mean, what is war? You know, what is, of course, now my father, he served in the First World War, and he served all his time over in Germany and France, and so they knew what war was. But I, you know, it was terrible, and we knew that this ship had sank, but, you know, like I say, we weren't as informed as kids nowadays. We had the radio, but, you know, that was in the newspaper, and that was about it, you know, as far as knowing what was going on in the world. We lived in our own little world out there in the country, and, you know, just, I know some of the high school boys were a little bit shook because they were talking, you know, about having to sign up and enlist, you know, or being drafted. And I know my parents said it was, my brother didn't have to go because he had lost his hand in a grinder when he was 14. And so he was ineligible. He was 4F, so to speak, because, you know. But if you were 1A, why, you get ready, because you'd be. And I don't know whether they called by number or alphabetically. I don't know how they called them back then or how they drafted them. See, there again, I wasn't really that close. I had a lot of second cousins that went. My dad's cousin's boys, there were 3 of them went, and then another cousin of his boy went, and they were overseas. I know a couple of them, and my brother came home from college, and he brought a young man with him, and of course I was a silly little teenager, you know, and this was a college boy, and I thought he was so cute. And he was so nice to me, you know, just because he was nice. But he got drafted and he was killed. That was kind of a sad thing. So that's a memory that my brother didn't go, of course.
And you said your family was inherited in Germany.
Yes. Not actually where we live, because you have to realize this whole area for probably 12 to 14 miles in either direction was all Germans. I mean, they had all migrated, and they were all brothers or cousins or this or that, and most everyone around there was German. And if you weren't, that was unusual. So, no, I...
Do you remember any talk about, you know, fearing for their relatives back in the
room? Oh, yes. Oh, yes. One of Dad's cousins had family back there, and they were concerned, you know, as to whether they would be harmed, but they weren't. As a matter of fact, when I got to go to Germany that lots of years later, the wall was still up, and they were in East Germany, so we had to go through the gates, you know, which was scary, and but they were fine. They made out okay, yeah. But Daddy said when he was in the war, he was over in France, and he didn't talk about it much, but usually they don't. And one night he said they were camped. There was a unit camped on the side of a hill resting. It was after dark, and they had walked and walked and walked all day, and all at once they heard someone talking. And he said they got to listening, and it was German. And so he said he moved a little bit closer, and there was four German, officers. And he could speak German, so he said, I don't know what I was thinking. So he said, I talked to him in German. He said, what is your group doing here? You know, and they answered back in German, and they captured four Germans, his unit, because he said that was kind of a dumb thing to do, but...
That was World War One,
yeah. But no, as far as two, I don't remember any animosity in German, because like I say, everybody was German from Great Bend, north, west, you know, all around was mostly German people, so...
How did you meet your husband? You were in school.
No, actually, I was out of school when I met Ralph. I remember, though, during the war, if you want some little memories, some things that I had. Like I say, we didn't have a lot of money, but Daddy, you know, he kind of babied me. And they had these little pins, and it said, remember, and then it had a Pearl Harbor, and oh, I thought those were so neat, I wanted one of those, or you could get a necklace, you know, but it had the pearl on it, it said, remember, Pearl Harbor, and I had one of those, I don't know whatever became of it, but that's, and then I was trying to think. It couldn't have been very much, but I know Daddy bought me a, they wanted you to buy war bonds and stamps, and I know I had a book, a little paper book, and it had squares in it, and you could buy a stamp, and I can't remember how much the stamps cost. I was wondering if it was a dollar, but it just seems to me like a dollar would have been way too much. But anyway, if you fill this book in, and Daddy would buy me a stamp every once in a while, then it amounted to $18.75. And if you left it for a length of time, it would make $25 savings bond. So that was lots of money. So I remember doing that. And rationing. We had ration stamps for sugar. And I remember tires, because as the war went on, see, I was getting to the driving age. And we had a pretty nice car. It wasn't brand new, but I wanted to drive. And Dad said, well, no, he said, at first he said, I don't know, the tires aren't that good, and so on. Well, then when I got to where I could have, the tires were rationed. And so if you had tire problems, you only got two tires or something, and so I never did drive. I didn't learn to drive till I got married.
Yeah, that's a different consequence of the war.
Yeah. No, he said, well, you better not, because because if we have, and people did have, and you could trade if someone had stamps, you know, that you didn't think you'd use them all, and they had, so you could trade stamps, but you just got so many per family that I know I couldn't drive because of the tire situation. So anyway, I survived, you know. Of course, not every kid had a car then like they do now. There was just a few that, you know, got to drive. But that was Ralph. See, I graduated high school.
What year was that?
45. And that summer, my grandma told my dad I needed to go to college. He needed to send me to college. I didn't want to go to college. I needed to be a school teacher. I didn't want to be a school teacher. Well, Bertie Lou's a school teacher, and Lynette's a school teacher, and Norma's a school. I didn't care. I didn't want to be a school teacher, but she just insisted I go to college. Well, my brother and his wife were going to Boulder for a summer session. They were both teachers. Yeah, this lost the hand. Yeah, he went to college and he became a teacher, and his wife was also a teacher. So Dad said, okay, I'll send you out there with Wilbur Neva for the summer session. And so we went to Boulder, Colorado, and I went to Colorado University. Didn't learn nothing. It was a waste of money. I'd rather had the money for what it, I don't know what it cost him, because... But while I was there, then the peace was, because I remember, well, while I was out there that summer on the campus, there was a dormitory with sailors and us girls, of course, and you know, wow, the sailors just lived a couple blocks in that dorm down there. So one night we got real brave and we run down there. They had laundry on the line, and I got one of these little white caps. And some of the girls took shirts. I wasn't brave enough to take a shirt, but I took a little one of those little white caps, stealing from the government. But I remember that. But then I know, oh, things just went wild. You know, peace was signed. You know, peace treaty, signed a peace treaty, and oh, everybody was just, the whole campus was just jubilant. You know. But then I came home that summer, and then I met Ralph here.
So before you go on, you were on a college campus, and what were people drinking, dancing?
Oh, they were just out hollering and horns a-honking and just everybody running around and yelling and hollering and just, you know, yippee and all this. No, we weren't drinking. We didn't have anything to drink, but maybe some were. I don't know, but... But no, everybody was just running around. Peace, they signed the peace treaty. They signed the, you know, the war is over. The war is over. And all, it was just, you know, so. But, yeah, I remember that. And then when I came back, well, then my brother and his wife, when they came back, then they had a school at, they taught school at Offerley. And I went to St. John for a little bit and worked there for a little while. That there was a girl that lived at Offerley that was in school, Ellen Pope, and she wanted to come to Kinsley and work when she'd graduated, but her parents didn't want her to come by herself, and so Wilbur said, why don't you come out and get a job, and you can room with Ellen and the two of you, you know, and so that's what I did. So I came out here, and we roomed over at Roy Warren's over on Colony. We had a bedroom, and we both worked at Duckwalls. And he came in Duckwalls one night, and then he kept coming back. But I didn't really like him. I liked another guy that he ran around with. But anyway, he was persistent, and he won out finally. Then we were married in October of 47.
Okay, what can you tell us about his service and what he did?
Yeah, that's what he did. He just, yeah, he was kind of like a, I would say he was like a nurse's aide. He gave shots and carried bedpans, and because the reason he wasn't, he had rheumatic fever, and so he couldn't, you know, the damp and the wet and the cold and all, they wouldn't send him any place for that, so they put him in this hospital to.
Now, did he volunteer or was he drafted?
He was drafted, yeah. Yeah, he was drafted.
Medics.
Yeah, I guess that's what he, yeah, because I know he said he carried bedpans, and I know when after we were married one time, I had to have shots for an allergies, and he could give me shots because that's what he did. You know, he learned, they taught him to do that, and to, I think, bandage after surgeries or clean bandage, just, you know, I would say like nurse's aide.
But he was from Kinsey.
Well, he lived, they lived in Lewis at the time. They'd moved from Centerview to Lewis, yeah. They lived in Centerview until I think they closed the school down. He went to high school in Lewis.
He graduated what year?
He didn't graduate. He was drafted. He didn't get to do his senior year because they drafted him.
Did the school system go back and give him his diploma or anything later?
No.
I've heard of that.
No, he went into carpenter work with his dad. This is what he did, was very good at it. And I know Ada Cross was a school teacher at the time he was in school. And him and his dad did some work for her and Jim when they were getting ready to have their second daughter, I think. And she just insisted it was like a GED. She said, go back to school and get your diploma, you know. But he said, I don't have time. I have to earn a living. And so, no, he never did get a diploma, never graduated. So he was drafted, yeah.
But then after the war, he came back to you.
Yeah.
Met you and married you.
Carpenter work. Mm-hmm. Until he went, in 50, he went to work, Dan was 6 months old, so yeah, it would have been in 1950, he went to work for Slence's on the farm. They gave us a house to live in. And he did farm work for them, irrigation and tractor and all that kind of stuff. He did that. And then let's see. And boy, this really boggles your own mind. I was trying to think. He started to work for Crosses when they were in the store downtown. They were just. And he did the dirty work. He washed the parts and he cleaned up the oil messes. And because with his rheumatic fever and in that damp, carrying those pipes out in those wet fields, and his feet would get wet, and he was prone to a little bit of asthma, he had to quit that. So Charles Cross told him that he would give him a job doing, if he didn't mind, just doing whatever, but he couldn't promise how long he'd have the job, you know, because they didn't know where they were going either at the time. And I know he went to work down there, and like I say, he did the flunky work, but it was a paycheck. And I can remember the first Christmas they gave us a toaster, and I was just thrilled to death. They gave us a brand new toaster for Christmas, you know. But then he continued with them, and then they moved to another building, and then, of course, where they are now eventually. But he ran a lathe for a lot of years, and then they promoted him to foreman of the back, and he taught guys back there, and then they put him up in sales office, and that's where he was when he finally quit and decided he was going to do his own business. And but he worked there 19 years for Crosses and started our own little business and wondered if we were going to make it, and it was pretty slim picking for a little bit, but the boys now are just, they're just doing fantastic, so it worked out. But he worked with his dad. As a matter of fact, they built our house at Lewis, him and his dad, and they built my mother's house at Lewis, where Kathy lives now. Yeah, they did, and they did, you know, all around. The only thing, the reason he kind of gave that up a little bit, his dad liked to fish too well. And they'd have a job, you know, and his dad, he'd want to quit early and go fishing. Well, Ralph was wanting to make the money. I mean, you know, he had a wife and a family, and so that's when he went to work for Crosses and worked there then, and like I say, till we started this in their own business. He started in 1974. And it's been about 35 years these boys have run this place. And they've wondered, but Dan was determined. He said, this was Dad's dream, and I'm not going to let it die. I'm going to make this work if I, you know, and boy, there was a couple years there that they had to go to work in Great Bend, you know, and just because there wasn't much doing here, and kept plodding away, and it grew and grew, and they got, and now they just, oh my gosh, can't keep up, which is wonderful.
So how many employees?
I think they have 22, I believe.
Now that's an unusual sort of experience as in this part of the country. Most businesses after the war and everything, you know, left.
Mm-hmm.
And yet your family built the business, you know, from scratch after the war.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. Well, see, Ralph said you can't copy. You know, if a company has a copyright on something, you have to. But he said, I know enough. I've started from the very beginning. You know, the first bolt we run and the first clevis we won. I know what this takes and so he learned everything from the ground up. So when they started, all they had to do was change one little thing that really wouldn't make any difference. It just either theirs was round and this was square or vice versa. Just some little thing so you weren't copying Crosses, see. And got started that way. There was a guy that drove the truck for Graves that picked up at Crosses, and when Ralph was in the back, of course he became acquainted with John Conley, and a very nice man, and they talked some, and so then when Ralph decided to go on our own, why, he asked John, he says, is there any way, he said, I'm not franchised, I don't have any kind of, you know, John said, if you've got some cylinders, I know where you live, he said, you put them out on the driveway, I'll pick them up, so I can remember, maybe they'd have four cylinders to ship, I mean, which was, wow, we sold four cylinders, I mean, that sounds ridiculous now. But that was really something, you know, an order for four cylinders. And John would come by and he'd pick them up. It wasn't on his route, and I don't know if Graves ever found out about it, but he was just nice enough he wanted to help out. And so then, of course, when they got to going, they used him over here, you know. But a little help along the way, you know, it was supposed to be, I guess. The only thing was Ralph didn't get to be in it because he got so sick then. He got worse, and he just, I know he'd come over here and Dan would say, "Mom, I wish you'd keep Dad at home." He said, "He's just, he just comes in and he just can't breathe and he lays on the couch and that's not good," and, you know, and, but he wanted so bad to be part of it.
So he started the business in 79, you said?
74.
Mm-hmm. And then when did he pass away?
80. Just the, well, 70, yeah, they started in 74. I can't remember what month they started, because I know we had a meeting at the house, and Mike Snowblin came, and he wanted to know if there was any way he could be part of it, because he was working at Great Bend. He was in the newspaper business, printing, and they'd been driving to Great Bend, and he wasn't happy up there. He was with his job and his... He'd gone to college, and he wasn't getting to do what he went to college for. And besides, they were driving to Great Bend, and they were hauling Shelley up there to a babysitter. You know, and so they said, "Well, yeah, if you think you can make it, you know, it's going to be tight going for a while." But then Ralph, yeah, he got really well. The last year of his life, he lived on the couch. He just could barely make it to the bathroom. That was not good.
And then when did your mother come out here?
She came out here after Daddy died. See, she lived out there on the farm, and she couldn't drive. She'd never driven. Daddy tried to teach her once, and she ran into a post, and she never tried it again. She said, "No way." But she couldn't stay there, because she was out in the country, you know, and couldn't drive or anything. So Daddy died in 57. Yeah, Daddy died in 57. And then she stayed with my brothers. They were in Great Bend at the time. She stayed with them a little while, and then she came out and lived with us a little while. And she said, well, she needed a home. She rented the farm. But she said, "I don't think I want to go to Great Bend, because I'm not sure how long Wilbur's will be there. And then if they go to another place to teach, then I'm there." So she decided to come to Lewis. So that's when she built her house at Lewis, and right across the street. That was a ugly old pigeon house. Brick, you know, the windows was all gone, the doors were, it was full of pigeons and all that. So she bought that, and Ralph and his dad cleaned that all up and everything and built her house up there. Yeah, so that was in, she probably moved out here, well, let's see, I know when he died, because we had a terrible, terrible snowstorm. It was April the 1st. And we had a blizzard while she and I were down at Wichita, and we weren't sure the mortician from Stafford could make it to pick up the body, because he died at night. And I was staying with her down there. And then we weren't sure we'd get home. Well, then my uncles came and got us, and we got out to the farm and no electricity, so we had no water, no heat, no nothing. My mother, bless her heart, it was a tough time for her. But she survived. She was pretty tough. But then that was April of 57. So she must have lived with us and my brothers maybe until into the next year sometime, and then she built her house.
Okay, let's go back to the beginning of the Lewis and Lewis County. You came here right after the war. Can you describe what it was like here?
When I came out here, yeah, I came to Kinsley, yeah. Let's see, I graduated in 45, in the summer, or May of 45. Then I went to Colorado that summer. I think it was a 6 weeks course or something. I'm not even sure about that. I know I was so out of my element because I was so much younger than everybody else.
That's right.
Yeah. I think I was like barely 17 when they sent me away to college, you know, and of course coming, kids nowadays are, you know, so aware, and but I lived on the farm, you know, and I didn't drive and I didn't go places. I mean, you know, I was kind of a hillbilly, so to speak, because, you know, and I was happy. I mean, everybody around there was the same way, you know, we didn't, and I had two cousins that lived, the second cousins actually lived a mile north, and then another that lived a mile and a half north and west, and we walked. We'd decide to play together, and I'd walk there, or they'd walk there. I mean, we just walked all over, and I had a little old lady lived a quarter of a mile east, and she was kind of like a grandma, and I'd walk down there, you know, you didn't drive no place. We were very fortunate. My dad had put in a what they called a light plant, and down this cellar, it was a cellar, it was dirt floor and dirt walls, was all these batteries on these shelves, and there was a motor, and when we were going to have like a birthday party or something at night, which we had a lot of, everybody'd come and bring cake, and we, you know, why, Daddy'd run the light plant, because we'd have a lot of lights burning that night, and the yard lights, so us kids could play outdoors, you know. So yes, we had electricity. There was some times that we didn't use it, because I can remember having gas lights with mandals, you know, that we hung down from the ceiling. We used some of those, and just regular oil lamps, too. We used some of them at times. So. But then we got, REA came, and oh, everybody got so excited, because REA was coming through our part of the, and I think that was in, seems to me like that was in 41.
During the war?
Or 40, maybe it was 45. I don't know. I can't remember. I just know that everybody, of course, most people didn't have a light plant like we did. So like I say, we could have electric lights, but everybody, oh, the REA's coming. Boy, they started setting poles, you know, and this and that. It took a while to get it. Yeah, it was right around that time. I can't remember exactly what year it was. Would have been.
Okay, so you went up to college, and then you came back here. What was your impression of Kinsey?
Well, there was lots of stores. I, of course, see, like I say, here again, I'm showing my hillbilliness, but I wasn't used to being able to walk downtown, and boy, you could go to the dime store, you could go to the confectionery, or you could, you know, there was just all kinds of stores. The Main Street, I mean, there were stores up and down Main Street on both sides, and a lot going on in the movie, you know, picture show, and so I just was right in heaven, you know, all this stuff so handy, because I wasn't used to that. I think we each paid $4 a month for our room. So they would get $8, but it was just a bedroom.
So for meals, did you eat out?
Yeah. We had to, you know, we ate out. Unless we, well, she'd let us use the kitchen but there again, there was no microwaves, and there was, you know, you just fix yourself a sandwich, or you boiled something on the stove if you wanted to cook something. But she would let us use the kitchen. She didn't cook for us. But there was a really nice restaurant, and I tried to tell somebody that, and Rosetta might remember.
Rosetta, do you remember?
Over on the street, along the street south of the bank, where the bank is now. There was a cafe there. Yeah. Colonial sounds. Yeah.
And at one time, it was for
Oh, is that right? Okay. See that? I don't remember, but well, that was, see, because we lived on Colony. We lived, well, actually, it was that big white house, catty corner across from the schoolhouse, the high school, that big white house. Okay, then the next house, I think Dr. Bain had that at one time. Okay, then the next house was Warren's, and that's where I lived. And that's where we lived. So when I'd walk to Duckwalls, of course, down that street, that cafe was there, so that's the reason I remember it, because it was handy. But, no, there was a lot of cafes. There was a bakery. There was, I know there was this family, they butchered and had a locker plant or something, Weidenheimer's, and of course the Foxes. At that time it wasn't Foxes, it was Ellers, yeah. And then across the street, that little dress shop, Clarice's, that was too rich for my blood. I couldn't afford her clothes. She had nice clothes, but at that time, you know, couldn't.
How much did you get paid in all
your? It seems to me like, I know this sounds ridiculous. It seems to me like I got $28 a week. That'd been not quite $100 a month, time they took everything out, you know. But then when you're only paying $4, of course I had to eat, you know, and stuff like that. But I don't know, $28 just sticks in my mind for some reason. I don't know what it would have been per hour. I can't remember. I think it probably like three something an hour.
And then you were a cashier?
Well, no. Well, see, actually, they didn't just have one cashier. You worked the whole store, and you were responsible for one section. I was responsible for the east side, the whole east side of the store, where the counters were and the shelves behind, and I was responsible to keep those filled and wait on people there. But if someone came in and was over here in another club, then you go wait on him. I mean, you weren't confined to your own space, but you were responsible. And then he put me in, why, I don't know. He put me in charge of decorating the windows. He wanted the windows decorated, you know, put stuff. And I'd never done that in my life. Mr. Cooper, his name was Mr. Cooper. But I did it, and he seemed to be pleased, so I guess I did all right. I don't know. That's my forte, is not decorating, but I did it. But I remember they said, there's one place you don't want to go, and don't go into Snatterley's by yourself. That man in there, he's scary. I know. And of course, you know, when you're just a kid, why, you take everything to heart. And so one time Ellen and I went in there, just, you know, just because we wanted to see, and he was kind of strange, but we didn't frequent that place too much. But no, there was lots of stores, and of course, like I say, I was just in, you know, seventh heaven, because I hadn't lived, you know, this close to so many things, clear out on the farm all my life, you know. So boy, this was like the big city to me.
You had never been outside of Kansas or
no
Hudson, well, except for college.
Yeah, the only time.
You went on the train, I think, to get to college?
No, we drove. My brother drove his car. I rode out with him. Yeah, he had a little black car, and they hauled me out there with him. And they had an apartment downtown. They rented an apartment off campus. But the only other time I think I ever, well, no, I went to Colorado one time. Mom and Dad took me to Colorado, and we stayed in this motel, and I thought this was really something great because I'd never stayed in a motel. But it was like these little wooden houses, you know, each little wooden cabin. We had one of those, and I know it was summer, and there was this big window, and it had this big board that come down to close. And if you wanted air, you went out there and you propped this board up, see? And so Daddy propped that up because it was kind of hot in there, no air conditioning, you know. But boy, we were taking a trip. We were going to Colorado, see? So
what year was that?
I'm trying to think if that's the time we went on to Wyoming. We'd had a pastor there at Peace Church that their daughter lived in Wyoming. Her and her husband, Falcons, lived in Wyoming. And Dad and their daughter's husband, they just really hit it off. And he said, you need to come to Wyoming. He said, we go deer hunting, you come up and we'll feed you some deer if you've never eaten deer. So one summer we went to Wyoming. And I think I was probably about 10 or 11 when we went up there. I can vaguely remember pictures because they had two kids and we played. And you usually, if you're older than 10 or 11, you don't play, but we played. So
this was at the end of the Depression, right before World War II.
Yeah, yeah.
Your family must have been doing okay
then. Yeah, yeah. Like I say, we didn't... You know, the only thing I remember Daddy doing for a little extra money was, it was the ears, I think. The county was overrun with rabbits, jackrabbits or rabbits, and they paid so much for a pair of ears. And I know Daddy went rabbit hunting, and he had these ears all hanging on a wire, you know, out in the shed, and then he'd take them to town and get a little money. And Mom sold eggs. You could take eggs and they would either pay you or you could take groceries, you know, and same way with cream, which we separated. We had cows and we sold cream, you know, so it was a little extra money coming in. I remember that, but as far as the finances, I was happy and I was warm and I had food and, you know, so that's all I was interested in. So, no, I don't think we really, as far as I know, the Depression didn't really hurt us that bad.
Okay, but and you met your husband and were married here or back in Hudson?
We were married in Hudson at Peace Church in Hudson, yes, and then we... when we left, let's see, I think we had a little reception, nothing like nowadays, you know, but we had his parents with us, so we didn't get to be together after we were married. We had to haul his parents back to Lewis, and we didn't have money for a honeymoon, and so we were supposed to get our pictures taken at Rumsey's, and... So we got back here, and he was busy, and then he had to do something. And I know we had our wedding pictures taken at 9 o'clock that night. And so before we could get the pictures taken, we said, well, what are we going to do? So we went to the movie right across the street because he was kind of catty corner across.
Do you remember what movie it was?
No. I just got married. And then we stayed the night up here at the hotel. At the Kinsley Hotel. We had a room up there on the northeast corner. Because I remember when Teresa had that, I went and helped her clean some. And I seen that room and I thought, oh, my, this was where I came when I was married. The big white motel down here that was right beside the depot. That's
New Grove.
New Grove, yeah, yeah. Yeah, that's, yeah, New Grove. I didn't remember the name of it, but, yeah, we got us a room there, and that was where we spent our wedding night, and then we went, back to Lewis, and we lived with his folks until we got a house fixed up. So it was different, but it was all right. And they had this little house, you know, and we had this little bedroom right beside the riverbed. The dining room was, and but that's all water under the bridge. Well, we got married in October, and Ralph had bought a house out in the country, a little three-roomed house, so we didn't have no money. I had $100 when we got married, and he had $50. I mean, you know, that was it. And so he had contracted for this little house. I think he bought it from some Wheaton. It was out north of Lewis. And it had sat there, and it wasn't, you know, it needed some windows fixed, and it needed some floors. But he was a carpenter, so he says, you know, for what he could buy it for, he said, we can fix it up. And at the time, then he was working for Jimmy Carroll, who moved houses. And so Jimmy said, yeah, that he'd let him use the truck and the stuff. And so we moved this little three-roomed house into Lewis and fixed it up. So we lived with his parents then. Well, he was working pretty hard because he wanted to get out of there just as bad as I did. See, October, I think we moved the spring of the next year, I think, sometime in the early spring of the next year, but it wasn't finished. The kitchen was livable and the bedroom, but one room that was still plaster and lath and, you know, everything had to be redone, but we decided we could live in two rooms just to get on our own, so we moved out.
And then did you continue working after you were married? Did you still work in the
Capitol? Oh, no, uh-uh. No, when we got married, then I quit, and like I say, when you say, when did you retire, I never really, never really. The only time I worked for Crosses. Don't ask me what year it was. Laura was. Well, see, Linda was in high school because she kind of watched over Laura while her dad and I were at work. I worked at Crosses in the office for Gary Vandola. He was in the. We did applications and insurance and. All that kind of stuff in that office, and I worked for him, I think, for a couple years. But then when Ralph decided that he was, you know, he was going to quit then after a while, and I quit, and that was it. Yeah, one little time I remember there was a scoop, mm-hmm. and you scooped it out and you weighed so much, it was so much a pound or something, yeah, that was, but I had a real bad accident one day. There wasn't much room between the wall and the counter, you know, there was room enough to walk. Well, on my side, I had, like, picture frames and for photos and wall pictures and all this. Well, I had gotten these frames in. They didn't have a wooden frame around. They were just the glass frame, you know, how those were just. And I had taken them, and I had laid them, a stack of them on the shelf like this. Well, they stuck out about this far, a stack about this high. And I was down at the other end doing something, and this lady came in, and she asked me something, and I couldn't hear her. So I started down this aisle, and I run into those glass, and I just sliced my leg open here. The corners of those blood started running. And I don't know, do you remember Mary Ellen Witten? probably not. She was older than you. She worked there. She was a little, well, she wasn't that old, but she had never been married or anything. And she hollered at Mr. Cooper and Mary McFerrin. You remember Mary McFerrin? And I know the blood was just, oh, it was just a, because it really slid. Well, I hit the corner of that glass, you know, just, and I had to, for a long time. Mr. Cooper, he grabbed some towels of brand. I thought, towels right off of the shelf, you know, they're going to get all bloody. Wrapped them around, and he hauled me to, rushed me over to Dr. Snowblin. He was down here and took me in there, and Dr. Snowblin sewed me up. And that was an experience, but otherwise, nothing too drastic.
Now, you heard that the downtown was very busy on like Saturdays and Saturday nights.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. That's when all the boys come over and rode up and down the streets, and we just always hoped they'd stay till we closed, you know. So when we walked home, they'd come by, and they did. They'd come by and pick us up, you know, Mary, Ellen, and I, and we'd ride around, you know. And just, yeah, those were the days. Oh boy. But I was kind of angry at Ralph when he came over and brought my engagement ring. He brought his dad with him, and so we didn't even, they'd had to come over for business, and his dad needed to come over for business, and so here he comes and brings me this diamond ring, and his dad's with him. Boy, this is romantic, you know. But he meant well. Lots of memories. But that's about it. No, the town was buzzing. I mean, oh yeah, there was people up and down the streets and walking up and down the streets, you know, and cars and, yeah.
And what happened in the winter? Was that mainly a warm weather activity? I remember it in the summer, but I'm sure that they still stayed downtown. They go inside, like in the bar.
I think in the restaurants, because see, like I say, there was a couple restaurants. If I remember, weren't there a couple little eateries on the north side of the street, up and along that couple blocks there somewhere? Okay. Yes. Okay. That's what I thought. There were several small, yeah, little eateries, but no, you know, I've just gone blank, because we had to walk. We had no car, and we walked back and forth to work, but you know, I can't remember walking in the winter. I guess young enough it didn't bother me, I guess, or didn't bother, just, yeah, that you just did it, because, well, when I was going to school, grade school, our schoolhouse was out in the center of a section. Why they put it out in the middle of the section is beyond me, but it was like a half a mile north and then a half a mile into the section where we went to school. Well, of course, I had cousins that lived a mile south and a half a mile west, and then there was a couple girls that lived a mile south. Well, the cousins, they'd start walking, and they'd pick up the Curtis girls, and then they'd come by, and my brother and I, you know, and we'd cut across we didn't go the road some, but sometimes we did if there was crops. It depended on what was planted there. But I can remember walking sometimes when there was a little snow on the ground. Of course, it was too bad why Daddy'd take us, you know, or somebody would take us. But I don't know, we walked, because that's just what you did. Never thought anything about it, so. But, yeah, it's been a long time ago. Lots of years.
Well, looking back over your life, how do you think the war affected your life then and maybe even afterwards? And other things and ways of looking at
them? Well, I don't know. It didn't affect Ralph's job too much because, as far as the carpenter work, there was always somebody that needed a roof or needed. We didn't have a lot of money, and we did about the only time, or I guess you'd say fun we had, we'd go fishing because it didn't cost anything.
Where did you fish?
We fished over on the river. We would go. Straight west of Lewis. Well, I can't tell where you wouldn't know who lived. Where Charles Slinses used to live along there, and then go on, and then you'd go north, and then there was a road that kind of went up in through the pasture. That's where we would fish. Did you fish there too? Okay. No. Well, yeah. Catfish. Yeah, and I would catch once in a while. I'd catch a big carp, but Ralph, his family, they said carp was trash. They wouldn't even mess with carp. Well, my daddy, of course, they said they were so bony. And my daddy loved fish. I mean, he'd eat any kind of fish. So Ralph was a nice husband. He got to where he would clean them, and then we would freeze them, and then we'd take them to my dad. He just was, you know, thought that was great. But as far as the Willard family, you just threw them up on the bank and just to get them out of the water. But yeah, catfish, channel cat, yeah. And the day before Dan was born, it was on Memorial Day. We went fishing over on the river, and it was so hot. And I know there was a barbed wire fence. And Ralph said, "You gonna be okay?" Yeah. And I got so hot, and I couldn't climb the fence. So I can remember, I got down, I rolled under. Here I am. And I got down, and I waded in the river. And oh, it wasn't very deep. Nice and cool. Oh, that was so nice. And Dan decided enough of that. He decided it was time to get out of there. So he was born the next day. Yeah, I waded in the river just before that. But that was about our only. I mean, I don't remember that we had a lot of money for foolishness or unnecessary things. You just didn't. But when you're not used to it, you don't miss it. You know, if you've never had it, why, you just enjoy what you can do and be done with it. And the first time we decided to take a trip was when Dan was, he must not been quite four, because we didn't have Linda yet. We went to Colorado. We decided we needed a vacation. And we had this car, and it's like they had this hump in the back, you know. So I built a bed to fit over that hump, and I had a $20 food stamp book. That's what I used for a week. That was my groceries for a week. And so every little extra, why, I'd save a little bit back to take with us for snacks and stuff to eat, because we couldn't afford to eat out, see, all the time. And I built this bed, and we drove to Colorado Springs, and we slept in the car. Ralph slept in the front, and I slept in the back. We put Dan on this boards, and we were in this park, which you'd never do now, but back then it, you know, and all at once I woke up and this flashlight was shining in, and Ralph rose up and rolled the window down. It was a cop, and he said, well, I was just checking the cars, he said, but you're okay. He said, I see you're a family with a young child, you're okay, but they check teenagers. And so since we were, looked like a husband and wife and a child, he said, you're okay. He said, just, so he let us stay there.
You said food stamps. What do you mean by that?
Well, you could buy a book at the grocery store when you had the money. And that way you know you had this much money left to buy groceries. In case all the money was gone, you still had.
Okay, so it was like paying ahead on an account.
Yeah, yeah. You could buy $10, it was at Brumfield's grocery store, Lewis. Yeah, you could buy a $10 book, and it would have like so many stamps for a dollar and so many 50-cent stamps. And so when Ralph got paid, I would buy a book, because by the time we paid all the other bills, sometimes there was nothing left. But I knew that I had groceries. Yeah, you bought
it.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. And I'll never forget one time I went down there, and of course I don't know, you had to know old man, we called him old man Brumfield because he was grouchy old. She ran the cash register. She wasn't so bad, but he was such an old, and he ran the meat market. And I know I went down there one time, and you could buy weenies. They weren't in a package. Just if you wanted three, you bought three or six or whatever. And so I bought, I don't know, three, four weenies, took them home, and put them in a pan of water to cook them. And when they, after they boiled, and I took them out, and they turned green. And Ralph said a few words, and he said, take them back. Well, I had taken back. I mean, we couldn't throw them away. And of course, I was young and inexperienced. I really, an old man Brumfield, he was, you know, kind of an old groucho, and I was really hesitant, but I decided, well, I needed. So I took those hot dogs back, and I can remember standing there at the counter, back at the back of the store, and I said, Ralph says these are no good. I said they've turned green, and so I want my money. I don't know what I said, but nothing wrong with those. And I said, well, they don't look good. And I said, Ralph says no. Okay, so he took them, he put them back in the case, threw them back in the pan with the rest of the hot dogs. I'll never forget that. I don't know who bought them or if anybody bought them, but. Rex's father, yeah, yeah, Abner. I think his name was Abner Brumfield, but he was a big old grouch. No, Rex was. Oh, Rex was. He was. Yeah, yeah. No, Rex. When he was in there, he would just do anything. I mean, he would. He was really a great guy, and he always called Irene the Village Queen. I'm learning. Here comes Irene the Village Queen. No, Rex was all right, but old man Brumfield, he... Probably not. But, no, and I went home and told Ralph. I can't remember whether I got my money back or I didn't want any more weenies, I know that. But Ralph said, well, what did he say? And I said, well, he told me there wasn't nothing wrong or something to that, I don't know, word for word. And I told him, I said, well, he took them, and I said, he put them back in the pan, and he just... shook his head, like, you know, so I don't know whatever happened to those hot dogs, but, yeah, some of the things, so, well, I blabbed long enough. No, as far as really, you know, really, like you say, the war, and if it affected me, and I don't know whether I was just oblivious to it, or if it just, you know, it
you had
didn't.
No.
Yeah.
And Ralph hadn't been overseas, so I assume he had no lasting
psychological. No. See, so I really, you know, there was the only thing was this friend that I remember when we heard that John Young, his name was John Young, and my brother had heard somehow, and he came and. He said, well, they got news that John was killed overseas. And what a waste, because he was such a nice young man, you know, and so nice to be when I was such a silly young girl, you know. But That's the only one. No, there was no others. And even in World War One, see, I had my dad and two of his cousins and two of my dad's brothers. They were all in, and several of them were overseas, and they all came back. So we never, so we never really had any crucial things in our family. So like I say, I guess not that I didn't care, it's just that it just didn't really affect me, you know. So anyway, yeah, it's been a long time ago. Lots of water under the bridge since then. But
maybe we can ask you this question. This is one that was in the thought of this morning, because we're all starting this. When you came to Kinsler, do you remember how the races were interacting, the Hispanics, the blacks, and the whites?
The only thing I remember, there was one black family. I don't remember Hispanics. There was one black family, but everyone reveled this family. Winchesters, their son was quite an athlete. Kenny Gaines or whatever. And I don't know when that was, but that's the only colored people I remember here in Kinsley, and
did
I don't know when that
was.
Well, I'm sure they did. I don't recall that they did, but I just know that it was. Well, I was used to colored people because I went in our country school. There was Maggie Harris. She was an old widow lady. Her nephew came to live with her. She was colored, and she lived about a mile east of us, and she drove a buggy and a horse, didn't have a car, and her nephew lived with her at one point and went to school with us, and he was colored, you know, and Maggie was colored. Everybody liked Maggie Harris. She was a little eccentric, but, and then a mile and south and a half a mile east of us, there was another colored family lived, the Walker family. There was a mother and three grown sons, and they just mingled with everybody. I mean, nobody even thought of them being colored, so I was used to colored. But I remember this Winchester. I remember this older man. I think he must have come in. He was kind of a little short, scrawny little... Yes, he was. He wasn't a big man, though. He was a small man, but he was colored and very nice, yeah, very pleasant, very polite. And then I remember this athlete that everybody talked about. He was such a terrific athlete, you know. And I thought, well, that's pretty great, but that's about as far as... But Hispanics, I don't remember. I don't remember any.
Two people that don't even have it. And Duck Waltz was where everybody went to do it. You could buy clothes there.
Oh, yeah.
So, where did the Hispanics find their clothes? If they didn't go there?
I don't remember. I don't remember any of them, actually, to be right honest. Okay.
But I only remember the one lady. It just makes you wonder where these people, because they were living across the tracks and taking care of the railroad.
They were, yeah.
This Mexican girl right here, when you were here.
Yeah. See, wasn't even aware of that. I don't remember that. But see, now we had a lot of, well, I say Mexicans, which they are, Hispanic at Lewis, but they were so like us.
They had been there.
Yeah. Ralph was real good friends with a couple of the Mexican, the Negrettis, you know, and the Castanedas, and it was no difference. I mean, And the same way with my kids, you know, when they grew up. As a matter of fact, Linda, she dated one of the Castaneda boys a little bit, you know. I mean, nothing serious, just, but we didn't, they were just like us. The mother, the, yeah, never learned English.
But she always had somebody with her. But that's, I think one or two, but that was, you know, that was later.
Well, see, this is like when Frank and Angie got married. They got married around the same time Ralph and I did. And, of course, they'd been friends. Ralph knew Frank. Jake McGray, I mean, like I say, they, as far as we were concerned, they were like us. I mean, no different. And Frank and Angie got married, and I know we had Dan, and then they had one, and then they had another, and then finally we had Linda, and they had another, and another, and another, and then we had Laura, and they had, I think they had like 9 or 10 children. I think their family finally, they finally ended up with 9 or 10 kids, I think Frank and Angie did. We stopped at 3. But one of their daughters was a real good friend of my daughter, Cruz. They were just, Laura and Cruz, they were just thicker than thieves. I mean, you know, and like I say, nobody, they weren't Mexicans. They were just like us, you know, not like nowadays, the ones that, you know, come and don't speak English or have moved in, so. But, you know, those people were probably, some of those have been there longer than we had, you know, as far as that goes, so, yeah. But I don't remember them coming in the duck walls. I sure don't. But I remember this little colored guy. He was very nice. He wasn't out, you know, he was kind of quiet or polite and very nice older man. So that's the only one I remember. So that had no bearing on anything. But that's about it.
Remember anything else you'd like to know?
Doesn't ring a bell.
Well, it may be the room because I can't remember for sure. Okay.
No. No, I don't. It doesn't ring a bell. Yeah? That might have been before my time, maybe, or after I quit working. No. No, I remember the clothing stores and the eateries and the jewelry stores. The jewelry store on this, and the banks, and the duck walls, and gambles, and oh, lots, you know, up and down the street, drugstores, and all kinds of businesses, and furniture stores, you name it, it was here, we had it, sure did, yeah, oh yeah, that's the way it was.
What church did you go to when you were in Kansas?
Well, when we were first married, I can't remember going to church when I was here in Kinsley. I don't think Ellen or I, either one, went. I can't remember. It seemed to me like a time or two my brother and his wife came over and took us. When Ralph and I were married, though, first, before we had a family, we'd go to my folks on the weekend, and I'd go to church down there because I was still a member. And we did that pretty much all the time because we'd go down and spend the weekend with Mom and Dad because they'd always send food home with us. Eggs and, you know, yeah. Homemade bread and all this
ham.
Good, yeah, and good stuff, you know. And but then when Dan came along, well, I don't know how old he was. We went to the Christian church a few times when we didn't go home. So we went to the Christian church because Paul Brockhausen was pastor there. and he also drove a school bus, and Ralph drove a school bus before we were married. And so Paul invited us to come to his church. And so we did. We went to the Christian church for a little while. And then we had, I know you belong to Christian church, and no offense. Every church is different, you know. But like I say, back then, we didn't have a lot of extra. You know what I'm saying? We were making it, and we were eating. We ate a lot of Nickel Lipton noodle soup in the package, you know. We ate a lot of that. We ate a lot of Jell-O, 5 cents a package. I mean, we survived, but you just, you know, you weren't extravagant. And I think we'd gone to the church maybe 2 or 3 times. Like I say, we went home a lot.
This was in Lewis.
Yeah, this was in Lewis. And about the 3rd or 4th time we went to church there was, I don't even know who it was because I didn't know half the people then. Some lady came up to me and said, we're having a something next Sunday. Said, we would like for you to bring a double recipe of Jell-O. And so I can't remember, I don't know what was said, but I told Ralph and he said, we can't afford it. We don't even belong to that church, and they expect you to bring this big thing of Jell-O. You got to buy the Jell-O and the fruit and this and this. And he said, we can't afford that. And we really couldn't. So we didn't go back. But I wanted to go someplace because Dan was getting, you know, I thought pretty soon I want my kids to go to Sunday school. And so then we started going to Methodist church. And after Linda was born then, I took my kids, Ralph, he wasn't a churchgoer for a long time. He couldn't see any point in it, but I was determined my kids were going, and I had been raised that way, and we were going to go to church. And I was Sunday school teacher for several years when my kids were small, you know, down the basement of that old church over there. It was dark and cold and nasty, but I did teach Sunday school for several years after my kids were old enough. And then we got involved in things, and finally Ralph decided maybe he was missing out on something. And I just kept going and taking the kids, you know, and finally he said, I think I might go with you today. I said, that'd be wonderful. We'd love to have you go with us if you want to go. And, you know, he started going, and before it was all over with, he was ushering, and he was just really got involved, see? But he hadn't been raised in church. As a matter of fact, he hadn't been baptized, and I insisted he get baptized before we got married. And so he did. He got baptized before we got married, but his family was not church. So, been there ever since.